From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, chief Washington reporter at the Boston Herald, and this is On Point. The old-fashioned store inventory may be a thing of the past. Rather than keeping products in stock for their customers, many online businesses have begun to favor a practice called drop shipping, acting as sort of a broker for consumers who can order goods straight from manufacturers. Drop shipping drives the price of a product way down, but the quality often comes down with it. Are the savings worth it? This hour on Point, drop shipping and the future of online retail. You can join us on air or online. Have you ordered something from a drop shipping service? Did you save money? Were you satisfied with what you got? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll talk deja vu at the NBA Finals, which start tonight. The Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers meet for the fourth year in a row. But first, joining me now from San Francisco is Alana Semuels. She's a staff writer at the Atlantic, who's written about drop shipping in online retail. You can find a link to her article headlined "The Problem with Buying Cheap Stuff Online" at our website, onpointradio.org. Alana, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim.
So we're all looking for great deals when we shop, right? So in what ways might drop shipping be a good avenue for bargain shoppers?
I mean, there are a lot of sites out there that allow you to buy really cheap stuff. And if you don't need a high quality product, like maybe you want a fleece blanket for a couple dollars, dropshipping can be a really good option. You know, you can go to wish.com or a variety of different sites and find really cheap goods that are going to come directly, in a lot of cases, from China.
So how do these operations work? How do consumers find these manufacturers? Who sets them up, and where are they usually based?
So there are a couple different ways. There are sites like Wish or AliExpress that consumers can go directly to and just browse. You know, they're kind of like Amazon, except they just have pictures of the items. Sometimes the descriptions are going to be lacking. And there's a whole different way. You know, you might see an ad on Instagram or Facebook, and you click on that ad, and it leads you to a little store that someone has set up that basically is ordering those items from AliExpress for you, but is kind of marketing them in a different way. So they're kind of using dropshipping to take a little cut of your sale.
And in your reporting, you talk a lot about Wish, which you just mentioned. And in September 2017, in an interview, the CEO of Wish, Peter Selchesky, listed the benefits he says his company offers consumers.
We have probably about 150 million products available for sale at Wish. That's too many to look at for any individual, but we show you only the things that we think that you might care about and buy. You have extremely low prices, and you have the convenience of just buying it on your phone, and then it comes to you later.
So that sounds really great, Alana. What are the drawbacks to this?
Well, I think one of the drawbacks is there's not a lot of controlling for quality. You know, if you go to a Target or a Walmart or a store in the U.S., there's going to be someone who's buying those items, who's ordering them from China, who's kind of selecting them based on quality and based on what they think American shoppers will want. When you're buying them directly from China, there's really no one doing that. You're just kind of buying whatever people are selling. So, you know, I ordered a smartwatch on Wish.com. I didn't really want to spend a couple hundred bucks on an Apple Watch, but I was interested in this $18 smartwatch. It did not live up to expectations, I would say.
In what ways? In what ways was it not the iPhone, the watch Apple product knockoff you were looking for?
Well, the first clue I had was when I opened the box and turned the watch on, and the camera function said Camina instead of camera. It was just very big. The face was very big. It has a pedometer, which I was excited about because I walk a lot, and it just would not measure my steps no matter how hard I stomped. I tried to find a SIM card to put on in it because a lot of the apps said insert SIM card. You know, I went to a few regular phone stores. They didn't have anything. So I went to a few in San Francisco's Chinatown thinking, you know, this is a watch from China. Maybe they'll have an idea of what to put in. And none of the SIM cards that they tried to put in the watch worked.
Thanks.
So it's basically a watch that doesn't really function as a smartwatch. I basically use it as a timer and an alarm.
Ah, I see. So one of our listeners made a comment from our website, Bob, about his experience. It says, last year, for $1.82, I bought a watch band with free shipping from a big website. Three weeks later, it showed up in my mailbox, and it was nice, both comfortable and sturdy, perhaps one of the nicest watch bands I have ever owned. But instead of being excited as a consumer, I find it all very disturbing. In what ways could this be problematic, even in cases where people like what they buy?
I think there are a lot of ways. I mean, first of all, this is really challenging American manufacturers and retailers. I mean, it's cheaper to make stuff in China. So if you can buy something equally as easily from China or from the U.S., you're going to buy the cheaper thing in China. That's going to really challenge American retailers and manufacturers. The second part is it's much harder to collect sales tax on those Chinese retailers. And then the third thing is there's a lot of problems with knockoffs and counterfeits where Chinese retailers see a product like an Apple Watch. They kind of make a cheaper version of it and they sell it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of lawsuits out there about these big U.S. companies saying, you know, these sites are selling knockoffs of our products. That's violating a lot of copyright and trademark laws. And we can't really do anything about it.
Mm. Vicky is calling from Oberlin, Ohio. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Kim. Nice to hear from you. I was listening to your teaser, and I agree that these deals are too good to be true. I ordered what looked to be a lovely dress online for a son's wedding. When it came, it was horrible, just awful. And when I tried to return it, the company offered me a 20% refund. And
wow.
After weeks, literally weeks of going back and forth and back and forth, and they finally agreed if I returned it, they would give me 100%. Then when they gave me the address, it was Macau. And I had no idea I had ordered a dress that had been manufactured in China. I would prefer to pay more for a quality item that was manufactured here in the States. But on that particular website, and I've noticed this on lots of websites, it's very hard to find the location of the company.
Mm.
So I'm wondering, is there any way or is anyone working on some kind of regulation that would make it possible for us to see easily where these products are coming from?
Alana, what about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So Amazon, which is one of the sites that sells some of these products, does not require sellers to say where they're from or where they're located. In Europe, retailers do have to say where the product or where the seller is based. So it's a lot easier to know. But in the U.S., there's no rule that you have to say where it's coming from. I mean, the other problem is brands can say they're coming from a certain place in the U.S. and they might not be. I talked to a company in the U.S. that said their products were being ripped off on a major U.S. website and being listed as their products and they weren't actually their products.
I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining me now from New York is Mark Cohen. He's a professor and the director of retail studies at Columbia Business School. He's also the former CEO of Sears Canada. Mark, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim.
So we talk about getting a great deal, but can these great deals be harmful to consumers and to retailers?
I think the watchword is caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. If something looks kind of too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. If you're shopping for something that's mission critical in your life and you're intending to do business with someone you've never bought anything from before, you're probably taking a big risk. You might be pleased with what you get. You might not. But again, if it's really inexpensive, it's really likely to disappoint you.
Alex is calling from New Orleans. Alex, welcome.
Hey, Kim. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Hey, so I'm a furniture manufacturer in New Orleans, and we are directly competing with names like Amazon and Wayfair. We constantly get customers who are interested in drop shipped items, but we don't drop ship. We are a small brand. Everything is handmade in our shop. And we have found a niche amongst this Amazon online type shopping environment where people are are happy to engage with us as the maker and the you know, the artist behind the pieces, and they're happy to wait 8 to sometimes 12 weeks for their products, knowing that it's going to be quality, it's going to be what they're looking for, and it's going to be, you know, within the realm of what they're paying for.
Alex, quickly, how do they find you?
It's all online. So we sell directly through our website. We work with sites like Etsy.com, who really embraces online handmade products.
So, Alana, how about that? And thank you for your call, Alex. Are there ways that U.S. businesses can try to beat these dropshippers at their own game?
Yeah, I mean, Etsy is a really interesting example because Etsy is handmade. Etsy, you go on there, you order directly from the manufacturer. But I think as customers get used to quick shipping or kind of ordering something and having it come quickly, I think sites like Etsy or like the caller are going to have a harder time as consumers become accustomed to, you know, clicking on something and having it come and having it be cheap. So I think it'll be interesting to see. Etsy would argue that consumers want this kind of high quality handmade goods and they're willing to wait for it and they're willing to pay for shipping. I think the evidence is out there, though, that customers are increasingly becoming accustomed to looking for the cheapest and fastest deal.
Mark, just a couple seconds before break, how can box stores like Sears compete?
Well, Sears doesn't exist any longer, so we shouldn't talk about Sears. It's all about assortments, great assortments, and it's all about integrity. Stores can be perfectly competitive if they represent a really important destination for their customer. In that regard, they have every ability to be successful in the future in spite of this trend that we're seeing.
All right. We're talking about drop shipping and getting great deals. You can join the conversation. Have you ever ordered from a drop shipping company and was it worth it? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator. In every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Listen every afternoon on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're talking about drop shipping, the arrangement by which retailers don't actually keep anything in stock and consumers order straight from the manufacturers. You can join the conversation. Is this the future of retail? Is the old-fashioned inventory a thing of the past, or will it make a comeback? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Alana Semuels, a staff writer at The Atlantic, and Mark Cohen, director of retail studies at the Columbia Business School. So I'm going to kick off by playing a clip from a reporter from The Atlantic, Alexis Madrigal, and what Alexis told the Gimlet podcast Reply All back in March about the camel hair coat he found on Instagram and ordered.
And then when I pulled the actual coat out, it was so synthetic. The material was literally nothing that you could purchase in the United States of America that I have seen. It could be refined into gasoline or diesel or something. I mean, it was just a petroleum product, and very clearly.
So, Alana, what do we make of this? What can consumers do to try to avoid buying some sort of petroleum byproduct when they're really looking for a nice coat?
I mean, it's really hard to know because, you know, you could go to the brand's website and buy directly from a brand that you know about. But if you go to one of these sites like Wish or even Amazon, a product can get really good reviews. You know, the watch I bought had 8,000 reviews, supposedly, with 4 stars each. And those reviews were not to be trusted. So I think, you know, as Mark said, if something looks really inexpensive, you probably shouldn't buy it. I mean, that being said, some people are happy to buy stuff that's cheap and knowing it's not going to be the highest quality. Just kind of know that you get what you pay for.
And Mark, are we seeing a real change in the way the retail economy is working, or is this just another minor shift in the world of e-commerce?
This is a major shift. It's not new, but it's emerging in a more and more powerful way every day. It's disintermediation. It's retailers working directly with manufacturers, cutting out wholesalers as partners. And it's manufacturers cutting out retailers, doing business directly with consumers. There's tremendous pressure on gross margin. There's tremendous desire on the part of customers for lower prices. And nothing in this life ever gets less expensive to manufacture and ship. And so cutting out the middlemen affords enormous savings opportunities. And by the way, this isn't only about cheap goods. If you buy a high-end laptop or desktop or fully featured iPhone from Apple, you're likely to be drop-shipped your product directly from the point of manufacture somewhere in Asia. Your order triggers a call to action on a manufacturing basis, and 10, 12, 14 days later, your product arrives at your doorstep. So this is a trend that's hand in glove with the technology that's available, largely driven by the internet, and it's going to continue to become increasingly attractive for everyone working in this marketplace. And of course, the customer is the benefactor.
I want to get to a call. James is on the line from Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for calling, James.
Yes, Kim. I've recently had an order from Wish.com, and I had ordered some shirts. I ordered 2X, and when I got them, they were all like a large size. They were too small for me, and it seems like they tailor their stuff for Asian people, and I think the stuff that they gave me seemed smaller than the American size, and I noticed the information on the packaging did show like from Asian countries like China, and so, and the quality of the materials, it felt itchy on my skin and everything. So I pretty much rather go places, me preferably go to that place right there and then and get it and see what I'm getting so I can know what the product is right there and then.
Yeah, thanks for the call, James. Alana, talk a little bit about that. I mean, wherever I look online, I'm always concerned, particularly if something is coming from overseas, about the sizing, whether it's European, whether it's by Asian standards. How does that work with drop shipping?
Yeah, it can be really hard to tell. I mean, you can read the reviews, but you never know if the reviews are true or not. So I think, again, you know, going to a website of a product, a brand itself can be helpful. You know, I did want to say, though, sometimes you do get a good deal. I mean, there are companies that license hardware from China, create their own software, are actually based in the U.S. and use these sites to cut out the middleman and sell high-quality products. There's a camera company called Wyze that sells, I think, a $20 camera. So, you know, it's just very hard to tell, and it's very hard to know what you're getting when you order something.
All right, I want to bring another voice in. Joining us now from Bozeman, Montana, is Andrew Udarian. He's the founder of ecommercefuel.com, a resource for online retailers. And he's also started his own drop shipping business in 2008 and has been an e-commerce entrepreneur ever since. Andrew, welcome to On Point.
Good to be with you, Kim.
So you started your own drop shipping company. What made you decide to do that?
At the time, I was working on a corporate job, wanted a little more autonomy and freedom, and just looked at a lot of options, and drop shipping appealed to me because minimal capital requirements. You don't need a lot of money to get started. It's location independent and it's highly scalable. So for me, those were the things at the time that made it a pretty attractive option.
And for our listeners who really don't understand how one sets up a drop shipping business or what it means, tell us, sort of walk us through how that works.
Sure. So when you set it up for, you know, any business, as someone much smarter than I once said, if you don't have a hard part to your business, you don't really have a business. And so on the drive shipping side, you're not adding value through a proprietary product that you have. So you have to add value through other means. For me, I sold communication equipment. That was through finding good quality suppliers, curating a nice quality selection of products that I could put my name behind, offering great service. So part of it is learning about the industry, setting up a web store that provided great information, high quality content, and then also marketing that store to the world. So those were the ways, really setting up the business and getting out there and spreading the word about it were the big things that I focus on.
And Andrew, we've been hearing a lot of concerns about quality when it comes to drop shipping. As somebody who is yourself a drop shipper, how do you react to concerns that these may not be, these sort of products might not be worth the money that consumers are paying for them?
Yeah, I think Mark touched on this earlier. He was right on the money when he said dropshipping really is, it's a way that you can fulfill an order. And unfortunately, because the barriers to entry to dropshipping are lower, and because with things like AliExpress, you can really easily sell things, very cheap items without, you know, vetting them, it can be more problematic. But at the root of it, if you have someone, you know, I like to think the business I ran, a lot of people that run dropshipping businesses that I know, even still today, It's all about vetting your supplier. Dropshipping is just a method. So if you do a great job of only working with quality suppliers, vetting your product line, taking great care of your customers, you can provide a great experience, maybe a little more work, but a great experience and a great product to an end customer. You just have to be more intentional about it. And unfortunately, with AliExpress and some of these other dropshipping, kind of new business models springing up that bring in products from Asia really cheaply, a lot of times that's not the case.
All right, we want to get to a caller. Krista is calling from Atlanta. Krista, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Cam. Thanks for having me.
And go ahead.
I'm a manufacturer. Yeah, I'm a manufacturer. I own a small business, and it's called Taj Mahal. We make dog treats, which are not like a high-priced ticket item. We're asked to drop ship all the time. People call and request and ask if they can order, and we'll drop ship. But the problem for us, and we've tried it, it was a nightmare, is that when you're filling orders that are less than $25, you find a lot of your time is spent on packing and shipping and labeling them. And then you usually have to pay whoever is, you know, hosting your drop shipped item a percentage of the sale. For a small business, I just don't see how it's worth it to small businesses. It's not sustainable.
Wow. Oh, Krista, thanks for the call. Andrew, what do you say to that? Is that one of the impediments of becoming a drop shipper or even offering drop shipping as an option for your small business?
It is. You know, I sold my last drop shipping business in 2016. One of the reasons I got out of it was because the drop shipping environment is getting more competitive for exactly one of those reasons. You know, with the growth in Amazon, it being much easier to sell via Amazon, with a lot of the technology that's sprung up, making it much easier to sell directly online, we're seeing a lot more brands go directly to consumer, or at a minimum, not dropship, and just go through a couple, you know, trusted distribution partners where they don't have to deal with as many people. They do more volume with fewer intermediaries. And so, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes you can have dropshippers that add a lot of value for a manufacturer that doesn't want to, you know, deal with the retail side, and that can add a lot of value in terms of marketing and value add on the front end. But they're hard to find, and that's definitely a trend that's making dropshipping more difficult for people.
All right. Anne is calling from McConnellsville, Ohio. Hi, Anne.
I wanted to talk about the quality of the product. We ride bicycles, and some high-end bicycle products are very expensive. If you're unaware of the manufacturing processes that go into critical components such as threads, you'll buy a, quote, titanium product for pennies on the dollar that has a cut thread, yet the name brand product has a rolled thread. If you don't know that the rolled thread is the safe one, you may have a massive failure on the road. It's not worth the cheap price to go past the name brand who's putting up their reputation on the line for you.
Yeah, Anne, thank you so much for that call. I want to let Andrew talk about that. I mean, sometimes we're not just talking about clothing. We're talking about products that can really lead to injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're buying something like a bike or something automotive or something where you're, you know, there's a safety element involved, you need to be incredibly cautious of those kind of things. And you think about brands, really a brand is kind of two things. It's you know, brand is a shortcut. A brand is a way to be able to quickly identify quality without having to do a lot of homework. And so I think for people shopping for stuff like that, as has been touched about earlier in the show, it's crucial to do your homework and only buy from quality brands. Not to say that they can't. When you think about something like the iPhone, it's manufactured over in China, and it's done with incredible oversight and precision and care by a great company. So there are great quality products that can come overseas and from Asia, mm-hmm. but it just depends on, you know, what the company is that's overseeing that whole process.
All right. Andrew Yudarian is the founder of ecommercefuel.com, a resource for online retailers. He started his own drop shipping business in 2008 and has been an e-commerce entrepreneur ever since. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we're continuing our conversation. Alana, I want to go back to you and talk a little bit about the legal protections or lack thereof for consumers if they do purchase from these drop shippers. How is that landscape different?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. There are a couple of lawsuits out there right now, people that bought things from merchants in China mostly. There are a couple hoverboard lawsuits, for instance. They bought hoverboards on various sites, including Amazon, and the hoverboards exploded and burned down homes. There are a couple cases of this. And the people are actually suing Amazon, saying that, you know, they bought these things through Amazon, and Amazon should have been responsible for making sure that the quality was there. Right now, this is going to be a really hard case because Congress gave companies that provide online services safe harbor immunity. And so they basically, internet service providers are basically highways that goods travel over. And so they're not responsible for kind of what's in the trucks that go over these roads. Mm. So, you know, it's going to be really hard to sue Amazon and say, we bought a bad quality item on your site and we want you to be held liable. But if they try to go after the manufacturer, it's really hard to find someone in China who made this product and go after them legally. So right now it's pretty difficult. That legal landscape may change depending on the outcome of some of these cases right now.
All right. Ed is calling from Barrie, Vermont. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for taking my call. I just recently went through that same process. I called two local dealers here in this area. One gave me a price of $500. The other price was $275. And so I went on Amazon and I got a price of $60. So I'm a little skeptical, but at the price, I don't feel I can go wrong.
And Ed, you're talking about a lawnmower, right?
I'm talking about a starter for my lawnmower.
Ah, okay. At
those two prices.
Yeah. So Mark, talk a little bit about what Ed is talking about when people are looking for a part or a product and they see these really different prices for what seems like the same thing. How do they make smart choices?
Well, they take a chance. If they are reasonably sure that the product that they're considering is what they actually need, if it's a brand or the product description seems to match exactly what they need, they may very well be able to get a bargain in the deal. They can rely on the intermediary they're working with, for instance, Amazon, and hope that the product that Amazon is representing is real rather than a counterfeit. They can count pretty much on Amazon standing by the product if the product turns out to be something different. Working directly with a manufacturer is much riskier because you just can't know what you're going to get until you open the box and hopefully discover that it's what you thought it was. Again, if the price is unbelievable, there's a very, very good likelihood that it's not at all what you think it is. There are bargains out there. But once again, if you're thinking of something that's mission critical in your life, you're taking a tremendous risk by just being motivated by price.
And Alana, in just a few seconds we have left, just talk about what your biggest takeaway was, not just as a reporter looking into this, but as a consumer yourself.
Well, I kind of love the idea that all these people around the world are trying to sell things to me online. You know, there's schools in China that try to help Chinese entrepreneurs sell things to Americans. So, you know, I think that's good for me and a consumer in some ways. There are a lot of people out there with stuff they want to sell me, and these sites kind of make that possible.
Okay. Alana Samuels is a staff writer at The Atlantic. You can find links to her articles about dropshipping and online retail at our website, onpointradio.org. Alana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Mark Cohen is a professor and the director of retail studies at the Columbia Business School. Mark, we appreciate your time.
You bet.
And after the break, deja vu at the NBA Finals. The Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers meet in Game 1 of the series tonight for the fourth year in a row. You can join the conversation. Will this year's matchup be any different? Can LeBron James keep carrying the Cavs on his shoulders? Will the Warriors shut him down? I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. A great analogy doesn't have to make sense.
Busier than a one-legged bobcat covering up his own crap on a frozen pond.
Didn't you just make that up?
Well, yeah. I just...
Planet Money, a poetic podcast about the economy.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins.
And the Golden State Warriors are on their way to a fourth consecutive NBA final.
Seconds tick off. It's over. Cleveland wins Game 7. LeBron James and the Cavs do it again.
Yep, and for the fourth year in a row, the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers are headed to the NBA Finals. But this year hasn't been the smoothest trip for either team. King James carried the Cavs on his shoulders throughout the playoffs. The Warriors clawed their way out of a few steep deficits with third quarter explosions. Game 1 of the finals is tonight. What will the matchup bring us this year? You can join the conversation. Are you watching tonight? Are we looking at a 7-game series? Is this matchup still exciting, or are you bored with it? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Francisco is Ben Cohen. He's a sports reporter for The Wall Street Journal. You can find a link to his article headlined "The Warriors and Cavs Will Meet Again. Here's Why This Time is Different" at our website, onpointradio.org. Ben, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kim.
So it's the finals, which means, you know, these two teams earned their spot in tonight's game. Or did they, Ben? What do you think that the matchup and the road that got them here, what does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that the entire NBA is trying to catch the Cavaliers and Warriors. And for the better part of the last year, even the best teams in the league have done everything in their power to stop exactly this matchup. And yet there was nothing they can do. And for the fourth straight year, for the first time in the history of major American sports, the same two teams are playing each other for the NBA championship in the same exact place for the same exact reasons.
Mm. So, you know, Ben, I grew up in the era of team ball at the NBA, you know, the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys and the Celtics and the Lakers of the 80s. But now we have King James, who, as we said, seems to be carrying his team, and the Warriors seem to be focused on taking him down. Does that make for a good playoff game? Is this good for basketball in general?
Well, I think what the NBA has seen over the last decade is sort of a remarkable boom. I mean, the game is as popular as it's been in decades, and part of that is because of enormous stars like LeBron James. And certainly it would help if he had even a little bit of help this year. So for the last 3 years, he had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. This year, Kyrie Irving is on the Boston Celtics, and Kevin Love is injured and may not play in Game 1. But what we do see is maybe the greatest team ever assembled against maybe the greatest player ever. Now, that is heresy to people who grew up watching Michael Jordan and still venerate him above every other player ever. But, you know, LeBron James is really making a case both with the way he plays and as long as he's been playing. But, you know, when it's... And we get to see him against a team that, you know, is eyeing its third title in 4 years and won more games than any team in the history of the NBA in the season that they didn't win. So, you know, it would be probably nice to see LeBron have some help and really have a shot against this Warriors team. But, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to see him probably at the peak of his powers in this series. And, you know, we'll be able to see how much one person is able to accomplish on the basketball court.
All right, Ben, I might just be a bitter Detroit Pistons fan. And, you know, it's a tough time for us. So speaking of LeBron, you know, immediately after the Cleveland Cavaliers defeated the Boston Celtics in Game 7 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals, LeBron James described the moment mid-season when he mentally shifted.
We've been counting out for a long time this season, and you know, right around the trade deadline, no matter if we made a trade or not at that point in time, I kind of just switched my mindset on saying let's get the most out of this season I can, and I'm determined to get the most. I'm trying to squeeze this orange so it's no more juice left, and this is a heck of an accomplishment for our ball club.
So, Ben, what do you make of that, squeezing that orange?
There might not be any juice left at this point, but you know, the Cavaliers really had to reinvent themselves at the trade deadline. They made a huge trade last summer when they dealt Kyrie Irving, and it did not work out. And the only way that they could rescue their season, even to the point that this was possible, was to shake up their entire team right before the trade deadline. And that still didn't really work out. I mean, it was only a couple weeks after the trade deadline that one of their players was suspended for throwing a bowl of soup at one of their coaches. That really happened in the NBA this season. A player threw a bowl of soup at a coach. And, you know, this was a team that had the 29th best defense in the NBA, and there are only 30 teams in the NBA. So it hasn't exactly been a great season for the Cavaliers, and yet they survived a Game 7 in the first round of the playoffs. They survived a Game 7 on the road in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they are here again. And it is because of LeBron James and how much juice he's been able to get out of that orange.
So Terrence is on the line calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Terrence.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I am good. What's on your mind?
I'm calling. I'm still excited to see this matchup. I think the Warriors exist right now with like KD because of LeBron, just to combat him. And to see him go 8 years in a row to the finals, I think is just not unprecedented, but just amazing in this era. And I hope he has a chance. I hope he has a chance. I hope he can pull it off, because then I think it'd be really interesting to see next year where he goes. I'm from Philly originally, so I'm going to trust the process, and I could see him going there. And then that, again, changes the whole realm of the NBA frontline. So,
yeah.
I'm excited to see it.
Well, Terrence, thanks for the call. Ben, what do you think of that?
Well, I think Terrence is right that, you know, in some ways, as crazy as this sounds, the NBA Finals, you know, the height of the season is sort of a prelude to what happens in the offseason. Free agency in the NBA starts on July 1st, and in many ways, the offseason is as big as the actual season at this point. And, you know, the biggest story of this free agency is where LeBron James is going to take his immense talents. He left Cleveland in 2010 to go to Miami. He left Miami in 2014 to come back to Cleveland. We're 4 years later now, and whatever happens in this series might very well dictate where he plays next season and, you know, probably the last few seasons of his remarkable career. And, you know, no one knows where LeBron is playing next year. Not even LeBron knows where he's playing next year. And that is because, you know, we've had to see this season shake out and see, you know, maybe they do have a chance against the Warriors. No one really thinks that they do. But if they do, and if they are somehow able to pull off this upset, that might very well change LeBron's calculus over the next few weeks.
All right. Emily is calling from Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Hi, Emily.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call, Kim. I'm calling because I think the Celtics-Cavs series was really a bad sign for the Cavs. Full disclosure, I am a Celtics fan. But I think even though the Cavs pulled it out, they showed that their lack of depth really is a problem for them, specifically when guys like J.R. Smith and Rodney Hood can't pull it out night after night. LeBron really just can't win four games by himself. He needs the bench. And I think that Golden State really has the edge there over Cleveland when it comes to the issue of depth.
All right, Emily, thanks for that call. Ben Cohen, what do you think?
I think that's right. I mean, you know, LeBron struggled and in some ways pulled like a miracle out of his hat to beat a Boston Celtics team that, you know, was without its two best players, Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. And, you know, the Celtics are an incredible team, but, you know, they are not the Golden State Warriors. And I think that series and really just, you know, the way that the Cavs have played in the entire regular season is the reason why Golden State is such a heavy favorite in this series. It's the first time in the last 3 years, anyway, that neither team has really gotten better since the last year. So like last year, the Warriors signed Kevin Durant in part because they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers the year before, in part because Kevin Durant is like an amazing player. The year before, the Cavs had Kyrie Irving, who was hurt the year before, to help with LeBron James. This year, they're just kind of slightly worse versions of the teams that played each other last year. And, you know, the Warriors won very easily last year in a 4-1 series. And I think that's probably the most popular prediction this year, 4-1 Warriors again.
Let's take a listen to Golden State's Klay Thompson after the Warriors defeated the Houston Rockets in the NBA's Western Conference Finals on Monday, talking about his squad's resiliency.
We've been through a lot with this team, and believe it or not, you know, it's not all success with the Warriors. You know, we got our bumps throughout the season, but to get to this point again, we earned it.
All right. And joining us for the rest of this conversation from Oakland, California, is Ramona Shelburne. She's a senior writer for ESPN.com. And you can find a link to her article headlined Why Round 4 of Warriors-Cavs Deserves Our Appreciation at our website, onpointradio.org. Ramona, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Kim, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. So what do you think? I mean, we've been hearing people who are tired of this matchup, tired of LeBron, and others who are really excited about this series. What are you expecting?
Well, I got to be honest. I was one of those who was hoping we would get some fresh blood in the finals for, you know, various reasons, some of them selfish, right? As journalists, we've done this before, right? I know all the plane flights, and I know all the hotels that I always stay in both cities. And, you know, you've seen, you know, you like, when you're writing about something, you like a fresh narrative, right? You want new characters. But I found myself at the end of that Houston series. It was Game 7, which it was a sort of a disappointing end to the series because Chris Paul from the Houston Rockets had gotten hurt, and so we're always left with what would have been, right? What could have been if one of the Rockets' best players hadn't gotten hurt in Game 5. But I found myself sort of appreciating, you know what, maybe this is right. Maybe this is the right matchup that we should have had because the Warriors have been sort of wire to wire the best team in the NBA. They may not have had the best record, and they may not have had the season that a lot of people think.
And do you think that King James... Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Ramona, do you think that King James is sort of casting a big shadow over the whole thing? Is he becoming too big of a part of this formula? Is it time to maybe go back to more of the team ball that I said I preferred from the 80s and 90s?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's part of the reason why I think I appreciate this series, though, is that no matter what you want to say about LeBron, whether you're bored with the idea of him being in the finals 8 years in a row, he is the best player in the league. Every single year we get to the finals, and he has left no doubt with his performance in the playoffs and in the finals that he is the best player in the NBA. And it's, you have to just kind of appreciate players like that. I mean, those are generational type players. There's one of those every 10 years. And I find myself, the more I get sick of the Cavs after a while because it's the same dysfunction, the same narrative, the same story over and over. And, you know, I do a lot of talk shows where they, you know, are the Cavs going to be all right? And I always say, they've got LeBron. They're going to be there. Like, he sort of won't let them lose. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I know what you're saying about the team ball. Like, I appreciate that more. I was hoping we would get that with the Celtics because, quite frankly, it's just more interesting right now. Mm-hmm. But if you're just somebody who loves sports and you're somebody who appreciates individual greatness, how can you not appreciate what that man is doing?
Sure. But I can attest here from Boston, there are still a lot of disappointed NBA fans here.
Yeah.
Lee is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Kim. Longtime Cavs fan from Cleveland area and seen all the ups and downs of the Cleveland Cavaliers for the last 15 years with LeBron James, and this year for a Cavs fan myself is very different for two reasons. One, I think this is an entirely different Cavaliers team that the Warriors have not seen, which I think gives them a slight advantage. But more importantly, LeBron is doing things in the playoffs this year that even amazed me after 15 years.
Yep.
And so I'm excited to see what he's going to do. I hope everybody in the world is watching, even those people who are not necessarily LeBron fans and are tired of LeBron James. I hope everybody watches. I know he'll deliver. It's going to be a fantastic series.
Yeah.
I just hope he does more amazing things.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Lee. Ben, what do you think?
I mean, I think he's right that people should be watching. I mean, the arc of this guy's career is really remarkable over the last decade. He went from sort of being villainized to being begrudgingly respected, to admired, to appreciated now, and maybe even he's like an underdog now, which is kind of remarkable for someone who's the best player in the game. I mean, that's what he's going up against. But this is like a new role for LeBron. He is clearly the underdog in this series, even though he is, as Ramona said, like clearly the best player in the game. And I think that is worth watching. I mean, that is what is clearly different about this series, is that LeBron comes in with, you know, the expectations that come with being LeBron James, but, mm-hmm. you know, no one expects him to win. So if he does, it would just be sort of incredible to actually see.
I want to get your reaction to some news that came in. The 76ers are investigating the president of operations there, Brian Colangelo, for his social media habits, possibly using Twitter accounts to boost his own work and take shots at players. He denies it. But Ramona, what do we know about this, and what might we expect out of that?
Yeah, this is just, I mean, talk about a 21st century story, right? I mean, we're like, this is so 2018 right now. I read that story in The Ringer, the initial story that presented an incredible amount of circumstantial evidence. And there's not a hard evidence on this yet. And so I feel like I need to reserve judgment until, you know, we have more of that, until data scientists can get to work, until the Sixers do their internal investigation, which will, I'm sure, be tracing, you know, where the cell phone activity. You know, he obviously would have a company cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
As they say, everything's in the cloud. But what we know is the statements that are made on those Twitter accounts, on those burner accounts, that have remarkable similarities and coincidences and relevance to his own life and interests. I mean, he's, you know, they were following his son's basketball team. They're following one of his best friends in Phoenix. It's so coincidental.
Yeah.
However, there's just a part of me as a journalist that's skeptical that says, if you were about to set somebody up, that's exactly how you would do it. Or
right.
The information that was in those accounts could have come from somebody close to him, like, say, his wife. And now there's a little bit of speculation that his wife could have been behind one of the main accounts.
Right.
Because...
Right, right. Well, that's going to have to be the last word, Ramona. We thank you so much. Ramona Shelburne is a senior writer for ESPN.com. You can find a link to her article about the NBA Finals at our website, onpointradio.org. Ramona, we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kim.
And Ben Cohen, a sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. We appreciate you for joining us too, Ben.
Thank you, Kim.
All right. And you can continue the conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. Thank you.